This podcast is brought to you by Wildflower Zen Sangha. This Dharma talk was given by Roshi Amy Hollowell.
Good evening. It's the first time I've heard that message telling me that this meeting is being recorded. It's nice of them to let us know. So, this morning I was leading a writing workshop, and I had organized a plan of what I would present and the exercise that I would propose for the people to write. And it's a group that meets on Thursday mornings, so I know the people, and this was our last session of the until next fall. But and about midway through, before I before we had gotten to the real exercise, one of the guys asked if we could do something different, if I could. Not follow the plan as I was planning. And he was kind of uncomfortable suggesting this, but he was confused about what I was proposing. And so he wanted to change. And so I said, okay. And I said, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do it. And he apologized profusely, and this was on Zoom, right? And said, I'm really sorry. I didn't want to mess up your plan. And I didn't say, right, because it's not a Zen group, you can't mess up the plan because you are the plan. I said to him, no, I'm fluid and I'm happy to do it a different way, responding to this situation that you're bringing up. And it was great, you know, it was perfect. It was actually much better than what I had planned. And this was a great teaching for me. I guess the teaching is that I could realize a teaching in the sense that it was an example that I could then offer to you of how when we are not attached to a plan, we have a plan, but when we're not attached to it, then we are free to respond to the situation without being fixed to the plan. And when I say, I could have said to him, you are the plan, it's because the plan ultimately for me in the writing group is to be there with them and accompany them on this writing path. And so that's the plan. And whatever form that takes, I don't know. It's good for me to have a plan to begin with, to say, okay, today this is the proposition, the writing proposition I am making. And this is how I will proceed, but it's just a concept, that plan. That in order to really follow the plan, I have to be free of that concept and respond to the situation. And the way that I could be free and respond to that situation was, I remembered that I had read somewhere, I think it was from the Zen teacher Katagiri Roshi, who talked about it's important for us not only to see our life through our own personal telescope of self, but also from the broad view of the universal telescope of not self. I think maybe he used the word ego, or egotistic telescope and egoless telescope or something. But ego is kind of a charged word. So, but it's this idea of the small telescope is how we view things from our perspective and from how we want them to be, with a scale that measures if they're big or small, good or bad, right or wrong. Whenever there's a scale of measurement like that, that's the self telescope. We're looking through the self telescope. But the broad view, or the, like the Tibetans say, panoramic view, the universal telescope, there is no scale. The plan is the universal telescope. There's nothing outside of that. And from that, looking through that telescope, I could say to the guy, you can't ruin the plan because you are the plan. From the self telescope, the ego telescope, he ruined my plan. But he didn't ruin the plan because he is the plan. So I'm just like using this duality to show you the example. And even when I say, oh yes, well, yes, I let go of the plan and it was actually good. That's from the self, apparently that's from the self telescope that I'm judging it to be good or bad. But from the universal telescope, I could feel the harmony in, it wasn't right or wrong or good or bad, but it was harmonious and more fluid the way that we did it, instead of the way that I had planned it. And I had planned it not being in the situation. I planned it yesterday or the day before. But when I was in the situation, something else arose. And so I adapted to the situation. And that's why I said it was good, because it was in harmony with the situation. And I could see that from the universal telescope view perspective. And our whole practice is about that, is about widening to see, sometimes we call it emptiness. Sometimes we call oneness, sometimes we call it the absolute. But our practice is about that, is about opening, widening the telescope to take in that other view, which is not actually other. It's like, when we say we have two lives, the second one starts when we see we only have one. Well, this is the same, so there's two telescopes. But when we look through the universal telescope, we see that there's only one. And that actually self-telescope is part of the universal telescope. So what was I saying? Oh yeah, so emptiness. We talk about emptiness. It's just because we call it emptiness because we've taken out the scale, the measuring scale. We've taken out the self aspect of it, the me aspect. And so it's just what it is. So the glass is just a glass. It's not a clean glass, a dirty glass, a good glass, a big glass, a small glass. A glass on my desk, a glass with Perrier, a glass with tea. It's just just what it is. And as soon as I put some label on it, then it's no longer that. It becomes conceptual. Labels will always limit. The name will always limit it. It doesn't mean that it's not empty. But when we're approaching it through the labels or the scales, the judgments, then we're approaching it through the small self-telescope instead of through the wide universal telescope. And I liked that image of categories of the telescope. It's more concrete than you know, some of the other things we use when we say, like, when we talk about self and not self, or attachment, non-attachment, discriminating mind and non-discriminating mind. This image of a telescope speaks. It's like at the physiotherapist who I go to, it's more like a personal trainer, actually, who's getting me in shape after all my COVID problems. And so she had showing me this exercise today, to a new one that I hadn't done before, with arms, like doing this with weights. And she said it's like, she calls it the poubelle, the trash can. And I was kind of confused. I said, why do you call it that? Because she said, because it's like this, it's like a trash can opening, the way you do the movement with the arms. Chick, chick, we're opening and closing, you know? And it's true. It's just the label she's putting on it. It doesn't mean anything. I mean, it speaks to me. And it helps me remember the exercise. But this is no more trash can than the trash can is a trash can. It's just a name, right? And it's convenient to name things, and it's convenient and helpful. Like I say, it was helpful for me to have a plan for my workshops, although it's really helpful when I'm able to let go of them, when I'm fluid and can let go. And the same applies for us in our life. And the more that we sit, the more we can become in contact with what the plan really is and let go of the idea we have of the plan. So we can get into contact with and feel, what is it that we really want? And what is the point of this? What are we all doing here? When people do things we don't like, we can see that that's just our point of view from the self telescope, that what they're doing is neither good nor bad, or important or not important. It's just what it is. As you know, she's not in this room right now because she's very disruptive, but I have a new kitten, right? Thanks to all of you. And she's a lot of energy and a lot of curiosity. You know, everything is new for her. And so she, you know, dumps over the trash can, and anything is a toy. She eats anything that's on the floor, bugs, dust, whatever. Constantly have to be after her because she's doing all kinds of things. And so I can think of it as being a problem. This is terrible. This cat, I'm exhausted. You know, we're a prisoner. We have to take care of this cat all the time. But we can also really appreciate the fabulous freshness and the beginner's mind of this cat. And by entering that appreciation, then I enter beginner's mind too. And I can have that same freshness that she has. I can see the world through her eyes. She is the plan, you know, in that sense. Of course, we have to set limits. You know, there are things she can't chew on the cord for my computer, or she can't go on the table while we're eating, or some of the rooms in the house we've closed off because it's too dangerous for her yet. We're trying to contain things for a while. She can't go outside yet, for example. And yet, at the same time, not being attached to how I want her to be or not, how I don't want her to be, makes it possible to just fully appreciate what is. And I don't remember my previous cat being like this, although I'm sure she was. This is what kittens are like, but I forgot. It's like people say about babies, you forget what tiny babies were like. And maybe Christine can identify with that, but. So. So that's why we practice. I mean, that's what sitting helps us to cultivate, is freedom to not stick to the plan, to have a plan and not stick to it. Because as soon as we start putting labels on things as good or bad or big or small or fast or slow, we're not there anymore. We're not experiencing emptiness of it. You know, the cat's name is Muji, which is another word for moo. And moo is the basic nature of all things. So this cat is a constant reminder of that. You know, she's a manifestation of this basic goodness, we say sometimes. And it's a great reminder for me to have that. That we are all manifestations of that basic goodness. So, anyone like to say anything? Questions? Comments? All of this I'm telling you is nothing new. You've heard it a million times from me, but. Not only from me. You know, another example is when, and we've used this example before of, you know, a little more than a year ago when we started all of this practice online. If we had said, oh, that's not the plan, we can't do this, how we would have missed something so precious. And this is a great teaching for all of us, right? That we were able to let go of how we thought things should be Some people weren't, you know. I've had people who say, oh no, I can't sit online. No, no, it doesn't work for me. Can't do it. Same with writing workshops. There are people who say, oh no, I can't do that. I can't write online. Or my husband has therapy clients who, oh no, I can't have sessions online. So they would prefer not to have sessions instead of having sessions online, which it's absolutely fine. There's no judgment on my part in that sense. It's just, I see it from the universal telescope and see that it's a manifestation of not being able to let go of the plan and adjusting, just responding to the situation as it is, and the precious experience that arises from that. And we are living proof of that. You know, we are all, we know it in our bones, in our hearts, this experience we've had. If you're here tonight, it's because of that, you know. Because the universe is happening whether you know it or not, you know. Yesterday was there was a lunar eclipse, a full lunar eclipse, right? Yesterday. And someone was telling me about how it's, you know, from like a shamanistic and astrological perspective, it was very important energetically, that moment. And especially for certain signs of the zodiac, it was very important. And it was a moment of opening to the unknown and things like this. And I said, yeah, I've heard that we can't see it from Europe. We won't be able to view it from Europe. And she said, that's true, yeah. And you, I think you could only see it from maybe the West Coast of the United States and or the Americas, or, I don't know, anyway. But we both agreed that it was still happening. Whether we see it or not, it's happening. The moon is there, the sun is there, the earth, it's there, whether we see it or not. And we talk about a full moon, but actually we're not seeing the full moon ever. Or we're always seeing it by just seeing a part of it. We're seeing all of it. But our concept, like someone, a Zen master said, there's two moons. There's the moon, our concept of the moon there in the sky, the moon that astronauts landed on, the moon that it was in the full lunar eclipse, our concept of it, and there's the moon that is not a concept. And that's true with everything. And that, so that's, we see one moon with the personal self telescope and we see the other one with the universal wide telescope, which the thing is with the universal wide telescope, we don't see anything. That's the trick. That's the trick. That's the paradox. Because as soon as we say we're seeing it, then we're back in the small telescope. Can only be experienced, lived, like our experience in this practice in the past year. Sorry, I opened it up for comments and then I kept talking, so I'll stop talking and let you say something if you want to. Joao?
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, Roshi. You were talking about labels I thought how I would it came to me how I would take it even farther, because life without labels, life would be a complete mess, actually. It will be complete chaos. The difficulties seem to come when we only see the labels, let's say. We don't. We don't see fully what the label is attached to, let's say. We just deal with the labels, and we arrange them in all sorts of ways. And all these are good labels, and these are bad. And then sometimes you can match some labels but not others. But the difficulties seem to come when we're just dealing with the labels. That's we're not actually see, not actually looking.
Yeah, that when you said if we didn't have labels, life would be a total mess. And immediately I thought, yes. And I was thinking, and if we only had labels, it would be a total mess. So, and that's what you then said.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of, so your son finishes third place in a contest, like you told me, right? And a music thing finishes third place. Well, third place is a label, right? And yet it means doesn't take anything away from his performance and himself as a musician and your appreciation of it and his experience of playing the music. Third place means nothing in terms of all of that. First place doesn't mean anything either. In terms of that, those are just labels.
Yeah, and exactly when we talked about that, there was something you said which I kept thinking about it, because it's a recognition. So there was this contest, and there was this place that he ended up. Well, it's the and then there was the award ceremony, which he didn't go. That's why I'm here, actually, because there was something else happening, a test, and some stupid, messed up stuff. Anyway, you talked about the recognition, and what I noticed was, and this was like I said, it was like his thing. Like he was not very happy that he was in third place. Maybe that was also a bit my thing, my view. Anyway, if I'm sticking with that, I wouldn't be able to see what you said. It's a recognition, and so because I'm looking at something else, I'm looking at the label of, third is not as good as second, or not as good as first place. So, and the whole thing with the recognition, I don't even see it. So, well, thank you.
Debbie?
I have another communist story about myself. I must have been very marked by communism when I was a young woman. I was on my way to Yugoslavia in a train. And I guess I'd never gone, no, I'd never been to beyond the Iron Curtain. And Yugoslavia was a communist country. And this was in the 70s, I guess. And I when I think of this, I can't believe I'm talking about labels that getting them wrong. I got off in Trieste and I was in a cafe And I had decided that Trieste was in Yugoslavia. Of course, I'm not very good at geography. So I was watching this cafe, seeing the waiter and the coffee and everything. And I wanted the world to be communist at the time. So I had decided that this cafe was, everything was working out very well because this was a communist cafe, that they all respected each other. There was no boss. I mean, I was in this sort of little utopian heaven where everybody liked each other and everything. And I paid for my cafe and they said, thank you. And I said, thank you. Isn't it wonderful, the Marxist world? And then I got back on the train and I realized that Trieste isn't in Yugoslavia. So my whole story about how this thing was working because we were in Yugoslavia and it was communist, it was all false. And I've had that happen. Actually, I realized that the last time I talked about this was with that Russian guy that in my parents' garden that I thought was supposed to wear black boots and have a big furry hat on because he was Russian. And in fact, he was in a bathing suit or something. Yeah, but, and traveling does that, at least to me and to other people that are around me. That moment when you don't know where you are and you can't quite pin things down. There's a moment of really letting things be.
Yeah, and traveling like that to, so being without your usual reference points, it's, sitting is that too. You know, that's what we're doing with our sitting practice, is letting go of our usual reference points so that we don't know where we are, and then we just see things as they are without our ideas of what they should be. Although, like, as you say, you know, sometimes you think you're somewhere, and you have all these ideas about it. And then when you realize you're not there, then it's not, you realize how you had these ideas. Yeah. That's what happens in our life too. Yeah. Barbara?
Well, I'm trying to speak. Okay. Last week, Friday, Christine and Krisha talking about the Zendo and how she, Krisha and Christine, fixed and was upset of not be in the place in Zendo. And this week I thinking much and I remember the Zendo alive, yes, the rules, the rituals, the plan, and us and Zendo and Dharma talking online. And sometimes I say, yes, is a confusion. I try to remember what and meaning of this. Well, sometimes I don't understand the meaning of some gestures that you do and Zendo and do here, certo? And when you talking about plan, I think immediate enjoy. And this, okay. And the teacher in the transmissions know that joy is the plan, because joy, it's already ended the ceremony, a funeral, was Amy says. And it's free of, okay. He was the plan and the ceremony and us in the Zendo, okay. And I think that, and I wish to share with us many rules, rigid, and me that I don't understand the nature of to Buddha, and sometimes we the heart touch the floor, and sometimes we and so on. And here and now, but when you saw and you and the you are very rigid in this situation, and your rush are same rigid, and you and Joe and okay, it's the plan, and the ceremony, it's so free, and Joa is can be so free in this, and us in the online and the Zendo as are as the plan. I don't know. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Barbara. It's true, this is all the plan. The rituals and all of that stuff. It is not the plan, really. It's just a bit, it's just things that we use so that it helps us to be present here with each other and follow this practice, just follow this path we're on. A story, you know, you mentioned about the putting your head down and putting your hands up. At my transmission, there's a lot of bowing, and there was a public part of the ceremony when I'm bowing. Yeah, I was bowing to my teacher and all of this stuff. And after my teacher's teacher, who was present and was witnessing it, he's in private. He said, or maybe he wasn't in private. Maybe it was in front of everyone. I don't know, but it's embarrassing for me. He said, "You know, she doesn't even know how to bow," referring to me. And my teacher felt bad thinking she hadn't trained me properly how to bow. And he said, "You know, she's like throwing the Buddha over her head when she bows down like this." And I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I just followed along. Nobody ever told me what this meant. But it didn't matter what it meant. And it didn't matter if I was doing this or if I was doing this. It only mattered if we were like fixed on how it was supposed to be and an idea of what it meant. My heart was fully that, and it didn't matter, actually. Of course, it was important to learn what it meant and do it according to that. If I was going to do it, I might as well do it properly, you know, and learn what it meant. And so I did. But as you know, I never talk about this. I never tell you, oh, when we bow, you must bow this way, especially now online, because none of us can bow. We can't really do it. So it's because for me, it's the heart that's the important thing. It's not the head. So I appreciate what you say, Barbara, because I'm actually happy to hear you say you don't know what it all means, in the sense of, not because I want you to not know, but because I feel that your heart is in it, whether you know what it means or not, because it means something for you. And you embody that, and that's what's important. So it doesn't matter if we know. And I say, and that comes through the screen. You know, that comes through, I'm talking to you because you were the one who was talking, that your presence in your practice is there, you know, you're there. And that's what matters. It doesn't matter if you know how to do this or what that means, or it doesn't matter. I appreciate that you do it anyway, even if you don't know. And even if you don't always understand the words too, because that doesn't matter either. I know it must be frustrating sometimes, but I think you understand more than you think, maybe, but I don't know. So thank you for sharing it. Miguel?
Hello, everyone. I stayed here with what João was saying about the labels and what you were just saying just now about doing it with your hearts, and there's no right way to do it. I like to think this is a special thing to me. I like to think that the world would not be a mess, it just be different, just would be different. And that there is a communication between us that it's far beyond or before words, and that it's because intelligence it's before the conceptualization, I believe, and so we would just express ourselves with sounds, with whatever, with telepathically, with touch, with gestures, but we could communicate anyway. Maybe not building computers, but it would be a different world. Well, just to say this, that before the right thing to do or the label, there is something very 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 something. Just this.
I think I hear what you say, and what's important is to realize that the labels are not just words, by our very being, by this manifestation we have, that we are part of we are manifesting in the world of the relative and in forms, and that so automatically, just by being in this human body, we are in this world where there are labels and objects and separation. And it's at the same time, like you say, before we start making all those differences, what is there? And that's what we try to return to. But you know, people who are blind, people who can't speak, they still have to struggle with these same issues of living in the world of form and differences and separation. So it's true. And the koans always point us to this. So what is it before a thought of good and evil, my mind says, what is the meaning of Bodhidharma coming from the West? You know, before the meaning even, what is there? So it's true, the world would be different if we didn't have language, but I don't really, maybe it would just be a different kind of language. And we would still be forming the same world of differences would be here now.
Yeah. Sure. It's just, I imagine before the verbal language, there were humans and there was some kind of language. We had to communicate. So it's another language, more direct. Maybe to say that a bear attacked me, I had to be myself a bear and running away. I don't know. I had to express something. But yeah.
Well, and our language is beautiful. I mean, we have this amazing capacity. Our mind, the same mind that is deluded, also is the mind of awakening, and so we can use language to awaken, and the vehicle of awakening. Katagiri Roshi, the same guy I said before, that book that someone gave me when I was starting to teach and convinced that you couldn't say anything. The title of the book is You Have to Say Something. And it comes from an exchange he had with a student who had some great realization and for a year didn't talk to him, to his teacher. And finally, when he went to him, he said, you know, I haven't been talking to you because it's impossible to say anything about it, about this realization I had. And his teachers and Katagiri said to him, you have to say something. Otherwise, no one will understand you. And so there is this, however we want to communicate, there is this beautiful possibility of connecting and experiencing the oneness through the vehicle of what we think of as difference and label and separation, but we can do it. It's possible, fortunately.
Well, I'm sure too.
Yeah.
I think if we put our mind in the intelligence that's all over the place, it's possible to express it in words.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Joel?
Yeah, I'd like to respond to Barbara and also to what you said afterwards. Thank you so much, Barbara, for acknowledging that you don't really understand what's going on in the Zendo. And it reminded me of an article that I read on a Buddhist blog about the why students and the how students, the students that ask, why do we do that? And some students just say, you know, how do I do it? It's just two different attitudes. And the article said, actually, well, the why students are usually a little bit more complicated to deal with because they want to know things. Whereas the how student is really about just the fully doing it, just fully doing it. And I think I tend to lean into the why side. I like to know things that because I, for me, it just suddenly gives more depth to it. But I also recognize that it really can be an obstacle also, because we've seen that in so many retreats, you know, that it's when you know something, then you might tend also to stick to the form by this is the way to do it. And this is because this is what it means. And then it's wonderful that you picked up also on the freedom aspect, because all these rituals, yeah, it's how to be together. And when we do that, it's also, there's such a freedom. And also the freedom also to, as Roshi said in the beginning, to respond to the situation. This is what we learned. So there's an aspect which is surrendering, like reaching the impersonal. And with that comes an enormous freedom that we're actually learning also. And when you talked about plan and the transmission and all that, it made me think of the fact that, yes, there is kind of something that we hope is going to happen. We kind of have an idea how it might happen, but really what will happen indeed, we have no idea. And I remember a year ago, I was talking to Gen Roshi, Amy's teacher, and she's going to be the precept teacher there. And she said to me, you have to open up to the mystery, because something will happen and it will be way beyond you, way beyond your understanding. And I cannot be prepared for that. So there is a logistical plan, but what's in the box really is mysterious.
Yeah, the mystery is, I appreciate very much that my teacher said that. And the fact is there isn't even a box. So it's not even, what's in the box is mysterious, but there's not even a box. So yeah. So we are about out of time, unless someone wants to say one last question or something. Otherwise, we'll do the vows. Christine?
Yeah, maybe just one little anecdote. When I was for the first time in a Zendo, in a retreat, I observed that people would walk around the table behind to go to their place, which would be just right next to the door. And I saw that several times, but as long as I didn't know what that meant, I just refused to do that, you know. I crossed the space to go directly to my cushion, and then I also saw all the people bowing first to their cushion and then towards the room. And I thought, oh, what a crap. And I didn't do that either. Why should I bow to the cushion and maybe to the other person? But as I didn't know why we did that, as long as I didn't do it. And then someone asked Sophie, asked if there, what are the rules of the Zendo? And I said, oh, there are rules. And then I did the rules. I followed the rules.
Okay. I didn't know that.
No?
No, I didn't know that. About. I didn't know if you were.
I felt kind of stupid later, you know. So, I mean, that was so obvious. Everybody was walking around, but I just couldn't do it as long as I didn't know the meaning behind.
So that's an example of how it can be helpful to know.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
Christine.
Yeah, there's no sense in bowing if I find it stupid and I feel ridiculous while doing it. Later, when I learned, oh, you greet your, well, you greet your neighbors and you greet the person in front of you. I love doing it. And, you know, it it created a very, when the other people respond, and I just found it beautiful. But before, I could not have done it.
Okay, so in my first meditation, say me right position and try not move. In my first retreat, the fly pick in me. It's the first time that a fly, and I have every time. So Joa say, not move. I can fly, and I have a ching, not. Yes, obey. Not move. Noble position. Yes, not move. Yes. Okay. I have in the Zendo with it alive. Noble position, not move. Fly, what's it? Pick me and I not move. All right. Yes. Okay.
Good. Sometimes we need to move.
Yes. Okay.
I must have said, try not to move.
Yeah. Well, and if you did move, I don't think anyone would have said anything. And I don't know if with Christine, if someone came and corrected her and said, don't do that. I don't know.
I don't think so.
Well, it was probably at Caroline's, right?
Wasn't it? Yeah, and there were certainly people who did not like me crossing the line.
Yeah. A long time ago.
Yes.
It was the first summer retreat we did, actually. So,
yeah.
Okay. So, shall we chant the vows? And
if you have enjoyed this Dharma talk, just give us a visit on wildflowerzen.org.